Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Thursday, May the 10th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And it's been quite an interesting day, I have to say. I don't often have big challenges to deal with, but I have one to deal with today. And it's been kind of pushing me, okay, how well can I stay in the positive frame of mind? But I went out to take my walk today, and I injured something. I had trouble getting back. I couldn't even get my full walk in. My knee's really killing me. So time to really focus on doing the healing stuff. I'm thinking of even doing a focus wheel. I'm not sure exactly what, but something. I got to get myself into a better healing place than where I apparently have been. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Well, and you know, whenever there's a physical issue like that, I like to go directly to asking the questions around what is the message of this physical injury? Because, you know, Abraham has said that every physical experience, whether it's physical in our body or physical by way of circumstance, it's always a message. So obviously you experienced something that was not feeling good. So that says there's probably some kind of a habitual or chronic thought that you're probably not aware of that you've been thinking on a regular basis. And because you hadn't been aware of it, it lands in your body because now it's got your full attention.
No doubt. When you feel the pain, you feel the pain. There's no two ways about that. Yeah, you're right.
And this might sound weird, but that's the pleasure. That's the good side.
Well, thank you so much.
Which is, there's a positive message in there for you.
Well, I feel so much better. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. You know me. Gotta find the positive end.
Absolutely.
Gotta find the Pollyanna view.
Hey, I like the laughter part because I do know for sure, and I've talked about it many times, laughter heals. So the more laughter, the better. In fact, every time we laugh, I'm going to be thinking about my knee, just like sending positive vibes to the knee from the laugh, you know?
Well, and you know, it's really easy to think, oh my gosh, I don't like this. How can I get to the positive side? And my recommendation is don't hurry yourself to the positive. Get the message. Because if you don't get the message, you're going to recreate it in another way.
Yeah, and I actually haven't been asked that question. Well, not quite so much in the last few minutes of the walk, because mostly at that point it was just, can I get home? But after I got home, I was asking that question. And I don't have an answer yet, but at least I put it out there.
And rarely are you going to get the answer while you're in pain.
Probably not.
Time to put out the question. But, you know, wait until you're in a state of laughter and feeling really good, and most likely then you'll be in a receiving mode.
Well, maybe I'll get it during the show, because I've laughed 3 or 4 times so far in the last 3 minutes, so I'm on the right track.
Very positive.
Right?
And very possible.
So how are you doing? What's happening at your end? I hope you don't have any injuries like I have. I hope you're having a good day.
No physical injuries. Had 2 client sessions last night, which is really exciting
nice.
For me.
Nice, yeah.
They both were quite wonderful. And, you know, one of the awarenesses that's coming to me, because, you know, as I've been doing this Project X, which is my deliberate desire to create something, I'm kind of recognizing certain steps along the way that maybe I knew about, but now I'm seeing all these different steps in the sequence. And one of the cool things that's coming to my understanding is how when we follow the intuitive impulses, when we follow the breadcrumbs, so to speak, where we get one piece of guidance, we do it. Each time we follow or take an action item, it is amazing to me how I get a new insight, which is kind of like the metaphor of the headlights in the dark, where let's say you only get 200 yards of light, but as your car continues to travel, it's like more light is expanded and made available to you going forward.
Okay.
Well, the same thing with this. So I did my 2 sessions last night, had a blast doing them, you know, which sounds really weird because, you know, one situation was she was in a real critical state, but you know, we move through it in a way that she got a beautiful result. And that for me is what makes it fun. It's not that she was in a sad place, but the fact that we are able to get such great relief for her.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
That is good.
But the thing that I started to play with some numbers afterwards, you know, like, okay, well, this is like starting to move and groove. And I probably made more money in the last week doing coaching than I have ever, you know? And so I'm like, oh, this is so cool. I can see, you know, evidence that I'm moving towards my new income stream desire, et cetera, et cetera. Well, so then I started kind of putting numbers to the calculator. Okay, well, if I have this many sessions and this many a week, and what would this be? And how will, you know, how many do I need to replace my old income? Well, I got to tell you, I've done this a million times. But last night I did it because I actually have evidence of this starting to move and groove in my life.
Good reason.
And I got the insight, which I've had before, but now I have the same information, but I'm a new person. I'm a different person. I'm in a new phase of who I am. And I got, there's not enough money in this. Not for me, not for what I desire. And I didn't get upset or angry. I just went, oh yeah, this is what I've calculated before, that for me to have the lifestyle that I want without doing back to back to back to back sessions every day, because I know that would burn me out and it would no longer be fun. It's like, huh, so I guess I won't be doing this much coaching. I won't be doing 40 sessions of coaching a week, which I kind of already knew.
Yeah, that would be a bit much. Yeah.
Yeah. But I somehow thought, because I'm in this new place, you know, somehow the numbers would magically be different. And I'm like, oh, they're not. But that's me counting on life coaching being my only source of income.
Ah.
And what it did for me is, not that I thought that would be my only source, but it solidified an awareness. This will not be my only source of income, because, I mean, there could be other things in the self-help or personal development space or law of attraction space or me teaching or writing or whatever. But it's like, I know I can't get all of my income from coaching, because that will not support the lifestyle that I desire.
Makes sense.
But it was fascinating to me, because now that I had, I don't know how many sessions in the last couple of weeks, but it's like there was enough on board that all of a sudden I felt the desire to go figure out the numbers. Well, where are we? What can I possibly estimate going forward? And I went, huh. Well, now that I know this is real, and real in that I'm really doing it.
Yeah, you're getting some results. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not going to, if I did this full time, it would take the joy out of it. Now, I want to do personal development / law of attraction full time. I don't know if there's a label or that all that goes under, but I want to do the things that are passionately exciting to me full time.
Good goal.
But I recognize life coaching, or the coaching work that I'm doing one-on-one, is not going to produce the level of income for what I'm desiring to produce. And so I like to knowing that, because that kind of has expanded me yet again. Like, oh, I wonder what else is on my trail that I haven't yet stumbled upon.
Okay.
You know, I want to keep doing what I'm doing. I want to keep my shingle out there, letting the world know I'm ready to do some major work with you if you're really highly motivated. And so far with every client, we're doing major quantum leap work, which I love, mm-hmm. and they're loving, and almost like to the point they can't believe how different they feel. So this part is fun. But this is not going to be everything. And that was just kind of my clarity. It's like, this won't be everything. And I always have known I require a lot of variety to mm-hmm. enjoy life.
Okay.
So I don't know what will be next. I mean, this one finally came to me with clarity, like, put yourself out there and do individual one-on-one work. So I'm doing it, and it's showing up, and it's fun. And it's so interesting. I barely began, and now I'm getting, and there's more. I'm like, okay.
But wait, there's more. We did that one again yesterday.
I know. So that's my update. And it fits into the whole model of how we create the desire that we really want, is we pay attention to the results that we're getting. And I paid attention. I had a feeling, let's go play with the numbers. I did. And then I got, ooh, that's not going to work. And I go, well, then what else is possible? And what came to me is, there's more. There's more things coming down the line. Just stay tuned. It'll come to you. Okay. So I'm ready.
And when you said pay attention to the results you're getting, I think you mean the good results. If you're getting bad results, you don't want to spend as much time paying attention to those. You want to.
Yes, I do.
As much time, as much effort, as much passion.
I want to pay attention to everything that comes across my path because it's all information.
Well, yeah, it's all information. But I'm wondering how much you want to put your attention on it. I would want to know all the things that are coming through too. But
I put my attention on it until I get the message that is supposed to come from it.
Oh. All right.
I am not afraid, Walt. I'm not afraid of focusing on something that's negative because I always have the intention of turning it around.
That's good.
I know that every negative thing that I ever experience is for my highest and best good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm not afraid of focusing on it for as long as I need to focus on it. But I don't take myself down the rabbit trail of feeling depressed. I can go, I don't like this result, and still feel okay. I don't have to feel negative or bad or
right. Yeah, that's where I was going.
Angry.
Yeah.
I just focus on this is the result.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I want.
Right. That makes sense.
Every result I've ever had that went in a direction I didn't want helped to bring a springboard to what I did want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all good.
Sure. Yeah. That's good. I like that. Mm-hmm. Well, all right then. Nice update there.
Thank you.
Yeah, very encouraging, isn't it? When you have good things happening and you can actually do stuff with it. That's the meat and potatoes of this stuff.
Yay!
So we are continuing our exploration of the Law of Attraction, the Basics of the Teachings of Abraham by Esther and Jerry Hicks. And I think we're actually more than halfway through the book. We're still in part three, which is The Science of Deliberate Creation. We're up to a subsection that's entitled, If I Can Imagine It, It's Realistic. And there's actually a whole bunch of these subsections. They're basically addressing a whole variety of questions that Jerry raised over the years talking to Abraham about this. And so they've kind of condensed it all into this one section of the book. And it's good. We've covered some really interesting stuff. This one I particularly like because it kind of touches on what I was sort of pointing to before. You very nicely showed us the better way to handle contrast when it comes into our lives. But very often people will get stuck on, well, this is what really is, and then they can't get off of it. So I kind of suspect that's where Jerry's going, but let's find out. Jerry asks, is there anything that we might want that you would consider to be unrealistic?
And Abraham says, if you are able to imagine it, it's not unrealistic. If from this time-space reality you have been able to create the desire, this time-space reality has the resources to fulfill it. All that is required is your vibrational alignment with your desire.
So Jerry follows up by asking, well, if I can envision it in any way, does that mean that I have imagined it?
And Abraham says, as you are envisioning yourself within that which you are imagining, you are attracting the circumstances whereby you will find the means to create it.
Okay, not quite what I thought it was going to be, but still interesting. So we go on to the next section, which is, could we use these principles for evil? Another interesting topic. Jerry asks, could a person use the same process of creation that you're teaching to create what some would see as evil, like taking the lives of others or taking things from others against their will?
And Abraham says, it is possible for someone to create what they want, even though you do not want them to want it.
Actually, I think Abraham phrased it as a question. Is it possible?
Okay. Is it possible for someone to create what they want, even though you do not want them to want it? And Jerry says,
yes.
And Abraham says, indeed, for whatever they want, they may attract.
That's a challenging statement there, but I have to say it's true.
So tell me why that's challenging.
Because people don't want to believe that there is any way to use or to take advantage of or to use one's knowledge of the Law of Attraction to do things that they themselves would feel is evil. You know, they don't like what the other person's doing with it. But the simple fact is there is no universal agreement on what good and evil are. It can actually vary from person to person with you know, some very reasonable variations. And
well,
I mean,
you know,
it would be really nice and easy if it was all evil. That was very, you know, very clear what evil was and very clear what good was. But as it turns out, it's not always that clear.
Well, you know, in the United States, we have freedom of speech. It's one of our constitutional rights. And yet, I believe that the originators who put that in our Constitution, freedom of speech, did so for what I would consider a positive, just reason, mm-hmm. so that people have the ability to speak their mind without being shut down or imprisoned or punished for their thoughts or opinions. However, I've seen, because I watch lots of lawyer shows, time and time again, where somebody who we might think of as evil uses freedom of speech as a way to get around being punished for the heinous things that they speak. And in a sense, that's still justice. The court still defends that individual using the right to freedom of speech. And so I guess I think about it, what Jerry and Abraham are talking about here in terms of what's just. And Abraham talks about law of attraction's version of justice has really nothing to do with the morality of good or evil.
Yeah, that's an important point. Yeah, because they really use the word quite differently.
Yeah, I mean, it really is all about, I've heard this said in another scenario, where justice is where the same result is given for the same type of action, where, you know, if somebody does XYZ, their result is going to be ABC, and that's always how it's going to be. And that's kind of the way the law of attraction works. It doesn't go, oh, you're a nice person, so we're going to completely bypass the law that we have set up, and we're not going to give you what you focus on, even though you focus on negative things all the time. We know you're really nice in your heart, and so we're going to defy the law, and we're going to give you nice things. You know, and it, unfortunately, a law is a law. It always operates the same way all the time. And I know that it's our humanness that doesn't always think of that in terms of fair.
That's what it is, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's just kind of a human concept. But, you know, for those of us who choose to use the law of attraction in a deliberate, purposeful way, what I love knowing, and maybe here's a caveat that will counteract this idea. If, let's say, you know, somebody is using law of attraction to their benefit to get some kind of result that you and I would consider quite unsavory. And if you and I have our ducks in a row, meaning we're using law of attraction in the way we know to use it, where we don't enter into our desire with resistance, and we just want what we want purely, even if it's the opposite of what this other person who may be very successful at using a law of attraction for things that we don't like, in the world of, in the environment of the universe, good always triumphs over evil. In that, all non-physical beings, you know, our loved ones that have crossed over, and Abraham, and, you know, our inner being who is part of us, but, you know, in non-physical, are in a state of pure positive energy 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
When we are aligned with our inner being, the force and the power to create our desire will always trump another individual who is wanting to create something that's not for good. Even if they're aligned, it's kind of like there is a trump card. The ace will always trump the king.
Mm-hmm.
That's also part of the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I look at it in those terms, like, okay, so there may be somebody who's trying to do something evil, but you know what? When I'm aligned, I'm more powerful.
Yeah, that's a good point.
My desires are more powerful.
That's a good point. And the other point that I would make is that the law of attraction, like the law of gravity, or even like physical things like hammers and knives and so forth, they're essentially tools. I mean, the law of attraction is more like a mental tool in a sense, but they're tools to be used. And you can use any tool for good, or you can use any tool for evil. I mean, you can use a hammer to hammer a nail into the wall, or you can use it to hit somebody over the head. You know, neither one is the hammer's fault. Fault has nothing to do with it. It's just that it's a hammer. Right. It's what hammers do is hammer. You know, well, the law of attraction is an attraction, it's a description of how attraction works when there's a vibration going on. You know,
and that's an excellent point, because I can't imagine if somebody was murdered by hammer that they would ever take the hammer to court and sue the
hammer. Yeah, that would be pretty unusual. not completely outside of the realm of possibility, but because all kinds of things can happen, but that would be fairly unusual.
They like to arrest the person who had the hammer in their hand.
Yes,
they don't arrest the hammer.
Right. And just because somebody uses a tool for harm doesn't mean that in judicial terms they're going to get away with it. It has nothing to do with using the hammer or the knife or anything else. It's just that one does not have anything to do with the other. Whether someone uses a tool has nothing to do with whether or not they're going to get away with some sort of a crime. Just they're not related. There is no connection at all between them. So I think we have to kind of regain a little perspective whenever we think about this kind of stuff. I think part of the problem is today, because of the fact that the law of attraction is still a law that is not accepted scientifically, and probably won't be until science one day is able to detect source energy and is able to start doing its stuff to understand how source energy is, and then perhaps they'll consider the idea of law of attraction. Oh yeah, there's that old law of attraction thing. You know, until that happens, then law of attraction is necessarily belief driven. It's promulgation, so to speak, is, you know, I believe this, do you believe this, yes, do you believe it too? You know, we're doing this based on the belief of what we think is actually happening. Well, since that's the case, that means we're also going to get grouped with religion. And religion is directly involved, in many cases, with moral positions. So the assumption is law of attraction is also about moral positions. And that's actually a flaw in the logic, because law of attraction has nothing to do with moral positions.
Okay. I'm not quite sure how you connected those, because, like, honestly, I've never thought of law of attraction as having any connection with religion.
I never would have either, except if you observe what happens out in the wild, so to speak. And by the wild, I usually mean social media, which is often kind of a Wild West thing. But if you observe what happens there, a lot of the time, a lot of the discussion in and about the law of attraction involves a lot of religious-like beliefs. Superstitions are involved. There are people who directly correlate law of attraction principles with religion. I mean, Christianity, for instance, there are numerous biblical references to various practices that are law of attraction-like and very descriptive of law of attraction. Well, because they're found in the Bible, then therefore people say, well, okay, well, therefore this is all part of this great Christian moral edifice that we're talking about. And now it's been brought into the moral realm. Did it deserve to be there? Not really, but nevertheless, it's been pulled into it.
Okay. I mean, I agree. I understand what you're saying. I don't know that that's my experience.
Oh, well, that's all right.
But you're also in social media a whole lot more than I am.
Probably more than it's good for me, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I know that I get email notifications of you responding to something in different law of attraction groups, like almost on a daily basis.
Oh, geez.
Like, oh, my God. He's like really in this law of attraction email, or not email, but Facebook world. Holy cow. I go there maybe like once or twice a month.
I know, yeah. And honestly,
and,
what got
mind
me in,
you,
what?
I only go there because I'm curious to see what you've said.
What I've said. And honestly, the only reason I got involved in the first place was just kind of to start spreading the news about the podcast. I figured, you know, okay, well, if I get involved in these groups, more and more people will find out about the show. And indeed, they have. We have gotten a number of listeners, I'm sure. I know for certain that we've gotten through those groups. So that part's been positive. The only bad part is that in order to be involved, you actually have to be involved in the discussions. So I've gotten involved in the discussions. So it's kind of a catch-22 there, you know?
So are you telling me, Walt, that what you're reading in there from more than one individual is how they have filtered the concept of law of attraction through their understanding of religion.
Oh, yeah, through their understanding of religion and their prevailing spiritual beliefs, whatever they might be. I mean, just because somebody has a spiritual belief doesn't mean it's necessarily religious-based, but you can still have spiritual beliefs, and those beliefs can have a moral component to them. But yeah, I see that a lot. I would say that that's actually fairly dominant in many ways.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I wonder, and I'm not into jumping to conclusions, but I wonder...
Well, let's do it anyway. It's fun.
I wonder if individuals who are seeking spiritual connection are a part of that group, because maybe somehow there's components of law of attraction that they feel have spiritual merit, and so that's what they want to go check out.
Could be. That would certainly make sense.
So that's a cool thing, you know,
yeah.
if we were to jump to the conclusion that people are seeking spirituality in their life.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, there's one woman who contacted me from a Muslim country, and she is a Muslim, or more accurately, an ex-Muslim, which, for obvious reasons, she probably doesn't broadcast too broadly, but she was willing to do it privately in this group. And she was concerned because what she was hearing about how the law of attraction worked, in her mind, kind of fought her understanding of God or Allah, because she's Muslim, and of how all that works. And so she was kind of struggling with, well, can you call it? Well, why are we calling it the universe? Why aren't we calling it God and you know, all that kind of thing? And I basically reassured her, you can use whatever words you want. It's not like you have to make your thought process match up to anybody else's in order to be right or wrong. And that put her mind at ease. But she clearly was being influenced by her religious background.
Mm-hmm. Because every one of us is clearly influenced by our socialization.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
Very true.
Today I was watching a Super Soul Sunday with Eckhart Tolle. And there was a question, there was a statement that he had made that like had, you know, throngs of like, wow, that was a brilliantly said statement. And Oprah says, and how do you know that? Which I thought was a really cool question. And he just looked at her like, this is like a no-brainer to answer. And he said, I get still, I ask questions, and the answers come from within.
Ah.
And it was like,
nice.
Done. And I thought, you know, that was a brilliant answer. I love the answer and the simplicity of it,
mm-hmm.
because oftentimes I have felt, based on my previous socializations, I've felt the need to prove why I believe what I believe and why I believe it's true. And I thought, you know what? I really have the same answer he does.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know what I know? Because I get still, I ask, and I receive an answer, and I trust it.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that anybody else has to follow anything that I believe as truth.
Nope.
But what I believe as truth supports me, and it allows me to live a life that feels good. And how I know that I'm believing something that is not my truth is because it doesn't feel good. And every time I find something I'm doing or thinking about that doesn't serve me and doesn't feel good, I challenge it and ask questions and go, hey, you know what? I don't think I want to believe you anymore. I don't like it. Boom, gone, flicked away.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense.
You know, and some people choose to believe based on what a big religion believes, and they all already come with tons of rules and regulations and principles and guiding principles, etc. The religion I follow is that I don't follow one, but if you were to call it one, I'd say it's the religion of Wendy, but I don't ask anybody else to be in my congregation.
Well, that's a good thing.
I don't require that, but you know, how I've come to believe the things that I've believed are because I go within and I ask,
mm-hmm.
and if it feels good, that's part of my belief system. It's part of the Wendy religion.
We'll call it Wendyism. That's good, though. I like that. That's very good.
I think it would be a wonderful thing if there were as many religions as there are people in the universe.
Well,
I
think your wishes
would have their own.
I think your wish has already been granted. There are some people who might not recognize that, but I think it's already true.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that's the premise by which we came into this physical life. We knew that the world was going to revolve around us and our own beliefs.
Right. Yeah.
And we didn't need to join up with anybody else if we chose not to.
Well, exactly. I think that's really what it comes down to. I mean, joining up is always and should always be a thing about choice, freedom of choice. There are some people who would rather that it also in some way be kind of semi-under-the-table coercive, like kind of make them believe my way. You see a lot of that too. But anyway, actually it kind of ties in a little bit to the next subsection, which is there more power in group co-creating? Jerry asks, can we compound our power or our ability to create something by coming together as a group of people?
And Abraham says, the advantage to coming together to create something is that you may stimulate and enhance the desire. The disadvantage is that there are more than one of you. I didn't say that right. The disadvantage is that as there are more of you, it becomes more difficult to stay focused upon, to stay focused only upon what is wanted. Individually, you hold enough power to create anything that you can imagine. Therefore, you do not need to come together with others. It can, however, be fun.
Oh, yeah. Very much true. It's very fun. Didn't really answer the question, which is kind of interesting. I mean, it did answer it, but not the way Jerry was looking for. Jerry was asking, can we compound our power? And Abraham didn't even address power. Abraham addressed desire, which I guess kind of has a parallel, but not quite the same thing. So let's see. Next section. Oh, did you have something for it?
No, I was just kind of rereading it as you were talking. And I have to say that there are plenty of times that I've heard Abraham not really address a subject head on.
Yeah, they often don't.
They prefer to take the question and spin it into what they feel would be an appropriate piece of information to provide.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'd say 99,000 times out of 100,000 times they're right. That's exactly what it is. Okay, so next section says, what if they don't want me to succeed? So in other words, other people influencing you. Jerry asks, is it possible to create effectively when we're in the company of people who strongly oppose what we want?
And Abraham says, by focusing upon what you desire, you could ignore their opposition. If you oppose their opposition, however, then you would not be focused upon what you want, and your creation would be affected. It's easier to walk away where you no longer need to focus on the opposition in order to stay focused on your desire. But if you need to walk away from someone because of the potential for opposition, then you need to get out of the town too. For most certainly, there are those who are not in total agreement with your ideas and out of this country and off the face of the planet.
This is pretty severe.
Removing yourself from opposition is not necessary. Just focus upon what you want, and by the power of your own clarity, you will be able to positively create under any circumstances.
Yeah, there's a good lesson in there, because the lesson is don't get wrapped up in other people's wantings. Get wrapped up in your own. I mean, that there's plenty to keep us busy. It's not like we have to go after everybody else's too.
Yeah, and you know, I keep hearing over and over whenever I think about somebody else, it's none of your business. It's none of your business.
Yeah, you were talking to me yesterday or the other day about how you get that message a lot. That's a cool message.
I do. I mean, even if I'm thinking about, you know, my little sister and I know she's coming over tomorrow night, I'll think about, I wonder what she's doing now, and I wonder if she's going to buy so-and-so and bring it over to my house, and I'll get, it's none of your business. Okay. Wait until she shows up, you know, and whatever she has brought with her is what she's brought, but because anything else, none of my business.
And by the way, Jerry wasn't actually quite done here, so he has one more question. He says, are you saying that we'll be receiving the essence of everything we are thinking about, whether it's something we do want or something we don't want, as long as it has emotion connected to it?
And Abraham says, if you're thinking about a thought that you remain focused upon long enough, the law of attraction will deliver more thoughts unto it until it becomes clear enough that emotion will be evoked. Every thought that you think, if you keep thinking it, will eventually become powerful enough to attract the essence of itself into your experience.
And another really nice example of how Abraham refines the question exactly in the direction they really want it to go. I like that. It's a good skill they have. I guess it's what happens when you're not just a single being, but you're a whole group of beings, and anybody can kind of jump in at any right any time with like the best thing to say. That's powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, you know what? We're almost near the end of this part. This is the last.
I knew
part.
You were going to say it. I knew you would not be able to hold your tongue on that.
Why would I want to hold my tongue on that? I don't understand.
I just think it's funny that you have a thing about the beginning of a chapter, the end of a chapter, where are in the chapter.
Fun. It's fun. It's fun. I just like it.
I know it is. You wouldn't keep doing it.
That's right. Hey, at least I'm not hanging on to coat hangers to open car doors for people. Like Esther liked to do. I just like to notice where we are in a chapter. That's all right. So anyway, this last subsection is entitled, How Do I Use My Momentum's Flow for Growth? Interesting question. Jerry asks, Abraham, how can we get into a state of flow where the momentum that we've created is now adding to our growth, that is, to our forward motion?
And Abraham says, by finding one small thing that makes you happy when you think about it, and then focusing upon it until the law of attraction brings more and more and more. The more you think of what you want, the more positive emotion will come forth. And the more a positive emotion that comes forth, the more you will know that you are thinking about what you want. And so it is a matter of you deliberately and consciously making the decision of which direction of flow you want. Everyone, without exception, is attracting everything that comes into their experience. But when you deliberately choose the direction of your thought, gently guiding your attention to better feeling thoughts, you will no longer create unwanted things by default. Your conscious awareness of the powerful law of attraction, coupled with your determination to pay attention to your emotions and your desire to feel good, will cause you to experience the joy of deliberate creation.
I really like that last passage, that last paragraph. Particularly where they talk about the gentle guiding of your attention to better feeling thoughts, you're no longer creating unwanted things by default. It really, that's one of the times that they really nicely start to address the fact that we live in a world where our thoughts are thinking all the time. Where thoughts are passing through our heads all the time. I mean, they may not be thoughts that stay long enough to do any serious attracting, but they're going on all the time. And it's not like we're focusing on just one thing, right? We have lots of things we like to focus on. And the focus shifts from moment to moment. And, you know, as we find one thing that we want, we will focus on that. And then all of a sudden we'll get distracted. Oh, yeah, I'm really interested in that. And then if we're still in the learning phase, maybe we're also focusing on something by default because we forgot that we can choose that we can focus on stuff. But the point is, there's a lot of this going on. And I like the fact that they actually took the time to talk about how there's stuff that we think about by default. They don't often talk about that.
You know, I wonder, I'm curious now that you said the word default, I wonder how much of even my life is still living by default. I don't know. Just a question. Not one because I'm trying to beat up on myself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, socialization is what causes us to live by default.
Mm-hmm.
And we were socialized from very young ages. And I'm just curious. Because, you know, like every client I work with, the reason the person feels stuck or is having a chronic area that they just can't seem to like get on the other side of, it almost always has something to do with a childhood experience where they didn't know any different than to think the thoughts they were thinking. And so those thoughts kind of became their default thoughts. And it would like seep into a person's understanding and affect almost everything. going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And those are default things.
They are.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the whole thing about default thoughts has caught my attention for so long. And maybe I focus on it too much. I'm focusing too much on my default. But, I mean, I guess what I'm really trying to address is the idea that we as human beings are really not capable in most cases of focusing on just one thing. Our focus is constantly shifting. And sometimes it's a little hard to keep track of, well, am I focusing on something I really want? Is it something I'm just focusing on because it's there and it got my attention? I mean, and often the line is blurred. So the whole idea of learning how to be a deliberate creator, how to deliberately focus, I think is really important because, among other things, it helps us. It helps me. I'll speak for myself. It helps me to learn when I'm really focusing deliberately and when I'm focusing my default. Just by, you know, the deliberate attention. Okay, I want to focus on X. It helps to kind of create a boundary, if that makes sense.
Keep talking. I'm not quite sure I'm following yet.
I'm not quite sure if I'm expressing it well, so we're even. It's one of those things that I have not talked about before because I think because it's a half-formed thought. But it's one that I really sense strongly in my own makeup. And I got to believe other people have the same kind of thing. There are times when I have to actually stop myself and ask, is what I'm thinking about deliberate or is it something that I'm just reacting to by default? And the act of doing that helps me refine that knowledge to the point that I don't have to take as much time in later days, later weeks, later months, coming to that conclusion. Over time, I get the answer quicker. Over time, I'm able to discern quicker. But it takes time. It's not something where I've gone instantly from, yes, I want to be deliberate about my thoughts, to I am deliberate about my thoughts. It's like this murky, soupy thing that I've had to go through, getting it more and more refined over time. And over time, it's becoming fairly consistent. I now know I'm focusing deliberately or I'm focusing by default. But it's still not 100%. And I'm wondering if it even ever does become 100%. I'm wondering if just because we have so much input that goes on coming into our brains at all times that we don't always know. We aren't always 100% aware which it is.
So when you are focusing on something and you know it's deliberate, how do you know it's deliberate?
Good question. How do I know? I think it's deliberate on those occasions where I consciously decide I want to attract that. Or it's consistent with something that I have previously said that I knew I'd previously said I want to attract that.
Okay. So do you ever have awareness when you're thinking something by default?
Yeah.
And how do you know it's by default?
I think because of, I can't remember any particular time, even in the now or certainly in the past, where I was deliberately hoping or wishing for something like that. So I was just kind of reacting.
Okay. Do you have an example at all of either thought, a deliberate one or a default one?
I'm
trying to put substance to what you're talking.
That's a good question. Let's see. All right. Well, a deliberate thought would be something like, I want to heal my knee. Okay? That's right. In terms of today's introduction, I re-injured my knee a little bit, so I want my knee to heal. I want to feel good. And so that becomes a deliberate thought, and it becomes the basis for maybe some sort of process that I do or whatever. But the point is, I'm now focusing deliberately because I want my knee to heal. Whereas a default example might be, let's see, I see something posted on Facebook about, what's the topic? A space shot. One of the private companies has put up a spaceship. And as I briefly read it, I'm just, you know, I'm watching what they're talking about. Oh, the space shot was to put this satellite into orbit. You know, they're providing all this information. I'm just kind of, you know, reading it. And then they introduce some topic how NASA is, I don't know, I'm making this up. NASA is feeling like they didn't really do the job right, and they could be endangering the mission or whatever. And so now it's turning into this conflict, and I'm really starting to watch this conflict like, oh, wow, this could be really, really serious. And then finally dawns on me, why do I even care? Oh, I'm just reacting by default. I hadn't given any thought. There was nothing here I was really wanting to attract, but I just kind of got drawn into this little drama that they were putting together.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and what's interesting is I don't know. I mean, there are certain times that I can just label something living by default, but I don't know that I've ever really dissected the word default to determine where in our life are we living by default? What does that really mean? How do we know when it's there? What does it look like? What does it sound like?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. Those are all good questions.
Yeah, I just think it's an interesting thing that I've never really explored.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about your knee, I was thinking the question that came to mind was, prior to today, had you had any inkling that your knee was not 100%?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So what were your thoughts? Because I'm wondering if the thoughts that you had then would be considered default thoughts. So, and I'm just playing with this. So do you have any recollection of when you had the evidence or the awareness that your knee was not at 100%? Do you remember what those thoughts might have been?
Oh, yeah. I've actually talked about it on a few of the podcasts, maybe not the afternoon ones. I can't remember for sure. But there have been times when I've talked about it. I injured it for the first time. I think it was like early February, something like that. And since then, I've actually been kind of rehabbing it. And that was part of my wanting so much to get out to do my walking and my biking, especially because it's a nice low impact way of you know, building up the muscles around the knee and so forth. And I had actually made a lot of progress on it. So it was kind of a bit of a setback. Like, I've been doing really well with the physical therapy. Apparently I hadn't been doing so well with the mental therapy because all of a sudden I had the setback. But yes, I've been focusing on it quite a bit since that February injury. Now, had I focused on it before that, I can't really remember. I don't believe I was.
So what did you think, or what do you think, or what did you think about its healthiness or its healing or its ability to function, or what might happen if it doesn't function, or any of those?
Yeah, that's been part of, I mean, those different avenues, those little rabbit holes you just described, those are all things that I have explored. And I would have to say that a significant portion of the time I was chasing down the rabbit holes that led to more injury or more pain. And I would pull myself back and say, oh, nope, I don't really want to go there. I want to go toward the places that actually help to heal and explore why healing feels so good. So I would try to go down those paths instead. And that's often a very common thing that I experience. I find myself being drawn at times to the dark side, to the side of it that's, oh, God, here's what could happen. You know, I even did some research to reinforce it, right? I found out that if you have a looseness in any joint, and these are the largest joint that we have in our bodies, if you have any kind of looseness, that can lead to things like ligament pulls, which is, I think, what I have. And if you have ligament pulls or ligament tears or, you know, ACL injuries, that kind of thing, that can actually lead to arthritis because everything is so loose in there that, you know, arthritic type growth, so to speak, can fill in. You know, I don't know exactly what arthritis is, but I know it has to do with extra bone being grown in some way. I don't know exactly how it works. So don't take what I'm saying with any kind of medical sense whatsoever. But the point is, under those circumstances, you can have that kind of negative result happening. And I spent probably far more time focusing on that than I should have. Now, I did do it because I wanted to find out, okay, well, that's what the risks are. What can I do to overcome it? And the answer that I found through study online was, well, you want to tighten things up. You want to, you know, get the muscles around the knee stronger, and you want to build that up. So that's what I was doing. I was doing my therapeutic side, and I was making ground too.
So all of that sounded like deliberate.
It was.
Okay. And I was wanting to know if there was any default thinking in there.
Oh, default thinking? Let's see. Was there default thinking in there? Probably. Just because I had a setback, so that suggests there must have been. But I'm trying to think. So, was there some?
Okay, like what just came to the top of my head, like a possible default thought would be, Oh my gosh, my grandfather, he had incredible arthritis in his knee.
Oh, yeah. I can't say I had anything like that.
I wasn't saying that was your circumstance.
Yeah.
But that to me would be a default thought. Or, oh yeah, my family has this, you know, in its heredity.
I think that kind of thing was sort of in the background because I know people have had situations like that. I think probably a major
Or I'm not a spring chicken anymore.
Yeah, that kind of thing
comes with age.
That's circulated a lot in my mind, and whenever that came around, I would notice it. That's a good example. I would notice that as a default thought, and I'd say, "Stop right there! I'm not buying into that." And I would deliberately try to turn it around. But yeah, that's a really tempting one because I am in age, according to the traditional projections of what happens as you get older, I'm getting into the older years. So that must mean, according to the way that default thinking works, that, oh yeah, all these things are going to happen. You can't do anything about the body's falling apart. So there's a very strong battle going on right there between, do I give into that default thought or can I stop and arrest it and say, no, that's not the way I'm going to be looking at it. That's not the way I'm going to experience it. And I find myself dithering between those two.
So in the, I'm not going to go there and I'm not going to buy into that, is there any resolution of actually taking those thoughts and disproving them to yourself?
Disproving them?
And the reason I say that is because there is there's a distinction between, here's a default thought, oh no, I don't like it, I'm going to go in a positive direction, which means that default thinking is really still there and present.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, and this is my practice, if I find a default thought, I start to talk to it and ask it questions. And I try to find a way to disprove it. Because if I can disprove a socialized belief, if I can disprove a default thought, it will no longer hold any attention for me. It won't be something I will have where I recycle it over and over.
Okay, so now it's my turn to ask you. Give me an example of how you disprove a default belief.
So when I was in my 30s, I went to my eye doctor, and I went, I can't remember, I went for just some kind of checkup, and I think because I was doing a lot of close-up work when I was doing sewing stuff, my eyes were getting a lot of strain. And I remember back in college when I went and got glasses, and it just helped with the eye strain. Because when I focus, I focus.
Okay.
So my doctor says to me, he goes, oh, because I said, do you have any reason to help me understand why this eye strain occurs? Which I kind of already knew, but I'm like, hey, I'm at a doctor. I should ask these questions.
Sure, why not?
And he goes, oh, it's because you're getting old.
Just what you
need. I said, I'm 32 years old. That is not old. What are you talking about? But it caused me to recognize his default belief was that as you grow older, even in your 30s, your eyes are deteriorating. And so it's natural that you're going to need some kind of corrective lenses. And to me, that I recognized was a socialized belief that I didn't want to accept, but I did leave his office going, well, he's a doctor. This is what he does for a living. Is there any truth to that? And there was a little part of me that almost wanted to buy into it. And yet a part of me felt like I wanted to fight it tooth and nail. And so what do I do with that? I start asking it, well, okay, is it really true that my body, my eyes are starting to like degenerate? And so the older I get, I'm going to have corrective lenses. And then I think about my parents, and I'm like, my parents at the time were in their 50s. And I'm like, neither one of them wear glasses. They don't wear glasses for driving. They don't even use readers. So they're 20 plus years older than me. And I'm like, okay, what he just said doesn't even hold water. Because I have two parents as living examples of people in their 50s, and they don't wear glasses. And I come from the same bloodline. So I think he's, just giving me a bunch of hooey. I don't have to accept his belief because that I don't want that to be true for me. And I have evidence in my life that even my family doesn't have glasses. Nobody in my family wears glasses.
It's an interesting point. That's a very interesting point because ultimately, if you look at any kind of scientific truth, so to speak, particularly with anything that's health related, almost all of it is based on studies that have been done that produce certain results. And as long as they see a strong enough variation between successes and failures, between the good thing happening and the bad thing happening, or whatever it is, as long as they see a big enough difference going on there, they call it a statistically significant difference, and that becomes the basis for saying it is a scientific fact. And that's an important point, because it means that with any given scientific fact, there are always going to be exceptions. There are going to be some that the whatever you were testing for didn't work out, and there are going to be others where it did work out. And because there was a preponderance of the things that did work out, they say it's a fact. Yeah, except it's not a fact for the things for the places where it didn't work out. So it's actually a very limited fact. It's an interesting point that you're raising. There really is no such thing as a scientific fact where medicine is concerned that is true 100% of the time. There are none.
True. And so, like, another thing, and I know it's another health-related thing, but another thing that comes to mind is it's considered that blood pressure at 120 over 80 is considered average and normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, or maybe not even normal, that's considered the optimal, because if a doctor finds that your blood pressure is higher than 180 or 120 over 80, they consider you have high blood pressure and they want to put you on medication.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really interesting for me is I know that my normal blood pressure is in the high 120s, low 130s.
Mm-hmm.
It's been that way ever since I hit a certain weight. Now I know when I have less weight on my body, it drops lower. But I had a heart specialist tell me, oh, you've got high blood pressure, I want to put you on medication. Well, I have a belief that when you're on medication, your body starts to allow the medication to do the work it used to do.
Then
it kind of causes you then to have to always be on that medication.
Good point.
It's not going to help you. It doesn't like help your body heal. It just helps to regulate your body, but you'll be on it for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took the prescription, but I felt into it like my normal thing. I asked my inner being and I got, no, don't get on the prescription. Well, I go to my chiropractor who I've been seeing for over 10 years. I see him every month and I tell him about this and he laughed. I said, why are you laughing? He goes, you don't have high blood pressure. I said, how do you know? He goes, I just know. He goes, I've been seeing you for years. I know what your health is. And I said, all right, start taking my blood pressure. And sure enough, over the last 6 years that he's been taking it on a consistent basis, it has maintained, like I said, in the high 120s, low 130s all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, hey, look, I'm a doctor too. You don't have high blood pressure. And I went, okay. Now, it doesn't matter what other people listening may think about that, but I knew that when he said that, that really felt it like it resonated and validated what I felt I knew about me.
Mm.
Because that, for me, as an overweight woman, is normal.
Mm.
Of course I'm putting extra stress on my whole body by having excess weight. Duh, that's just like duh. But is it causing so much extra stress from a blood pressure perspective? And I've always gotten a no. And so people who have a default thought that 120 over 80 is like the dividing line, you need to be on blood thinners, you know, if you're over it, and you're okay if you're under it, you know, that's a default thought. And yet I've had plenty of holistic doctors say to me that those numbers like 120 over 80 is just considered, you know, a standard by which doctors look at. But I've had some holistic doctors tell me, oh yeah, your chiropractor's right on the mark. Don't just trust that the average person has to be at 120 over 80 or else you have to be on blood thinners.
Well, if we had more time, I'd tell you a story about how my normal blood pressure dropped to a new normal, but we don't have time, so I'll have to save that for another day. It's been a pleasure. Okay. Let's do it again tomorrow. What do you say?
All right, let's do it.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.